I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy our time together.
In everything that we've covered so far during these podcasts, you've always recommended seeking out off-market transactions. Why is that?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. Probably the main one is that I don't really want my clients to be under undue pressure when they're looking to put a deal together. And the problem with auctions and tenders, as much as they might be good for the vendor, for the purchaser, you end up having to compete with other people in a very public arena. And that's not necessarily the best way to purchase property. You need to have some time to analyse it and go through all the details to make sure it is the right property for you. And it's not, if you're going to an auction or a pub or a tender, you have to do that work and pay for that work without any promise that you will in fact be successful when you submit your bids. And therefore, to my way of thinking, particularly in a strong market, you're more likely to miss out on the properties than actually obtain them. So what I like to do is to, through the network of agents that I've got, get access to property even before it gets on the market. Yes, I like off-market transactions in as much as, well, private sales, but I prefer to get them before they're even on the market. And the way I do that is through, as I said, through this network of agents who, when I have a particular brief, will let me know of properties that are or will be coming up for sale. And generally that's because they have been available for lease. The letting slash selling agent has secured a tenant and it's been under an offer to lease where they've exchange documentation, taken a 1 month's deposit, and now the leases are being prepared. Now, the thing is with preparing a lease, yes, they can be standard documents, but by the time they get the instructions, prepare the leases, get their client's approval to submit the lease, then it gets to the tenant. They have a solicitor review it. There are some queries and concerns, not so much on the commercial terms, but on the legal terms and conditions. They go back and forth. It could be 3, 4, even 5 weeks before the actual lease document is signed and exchanged. Now, if I hear about that property a week or 2 weeks into that process, I have 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, that I or my client has uninterrupted access to the property because that agent can't go to the marketplace until the lease is signed. They can't go publicly to the marketplace until the lease is signed. So as far as they're concerned, they're not wasting time talking to me because if my client likes the property and it makes sense economically, if he can secure that property before the lease is signed, he can buy it subject to the lease being executed on the terms and conditions as detailed in the heads of agreement. It has a lot of advantages for both parties. Firstly, the purchaser can do his homework, but what he will do is secure the property under a contract of sale and reserve the right to undertake a due diligence, which may be from any period of time up to 21 business days. So it's not until he has his foot on the property, as it were, under a conditional contract, that he starts to have any meters ticking over in his analysis. And he knows that while he's doing his due diligence. Someone else can't slip in and take it away because the contracts have been exchanged. So there's that advantage for my client, but it's also an advantage for the vendor because, and also the agent, because the vendor no longer has to run the 3 or 4 week campaign for advertising and the cost of it. And the from a developer's point of view, and most of these properties that we're talking about are new and this is the first tenant, the developer wants to get cash flow turnover. And so if he can shave a month off his marketing, having leased the property, that's money in the bank to him, less interest he has to outlay. Now, from the agent's point of view, they're able to go back a week after leasing the property and say to the vendor or the developer, look, you know that property I leased last week? Well, I've got an offer for you on it. And that impresses the developer because more often than not, the agents within the agencies who are leasing the property are generally junior agents. And so when the sales swings in, they more often than not, a manager or a director will get involved in the actual selling process. So if that junior agent can consummate a deal quickly before the lease documentation is finalised, yes, the vendor saves money, but the vendor is impressed. And plus the agent doesn't have to involve his manager or director because as soon as that happens, a large chunk of the commission is creamed off for those more senior people. And the developer looks very favourably on this particular agent because not only they leased the property, but with no fuss at all, they found a buyer. So it's a win-win-win situation. And that's why I have developed this network, this process of dealing with properties effectively off-market. And it just seems to make more sense.
But what if the property you want is being sold by public auction? How would you approach that?
If the property is being put to auction, the important thing is to establish realistically what is it going to sell for. And a second point is, at what figure does it no longer make any sense to purchase it? Now, hopefully, the second figure is above the first one. In the current market, there's a lot of activity, particularly for some of the very well-located properties. And whether it's commercial or residential, the market is at certainly Sydney and Melbourne is very strong, not so much in Brisbane and Perth or Adelaide. But you need to have a good understanding of the area, the type of property, and as I said, what it's likely to sell for. Now, more often than not, if it's a property that a client likes going to auction, the client of mine may well have seen it himself or herself and rung me and said, look, I've found this property that's going to auction. What do you think? And as I said, if we think it's worth pursuing, well, then what I will suggest is that they will have already probably made contact with the agent. They should make it very clear to the agent that they have a strong interest. And then sometime after they have done that, I will approach the agent quite separately, the selling agent, and ask them to provide me with all the information and details and so I can to pursue. Now, if we decide it is, well, then I will say to the client, well, you go and have a look at it, fix up an inspection time. I will do the same independently. Don't mention anything about my involvement, and nor will I disclose who I am in fact acting for. So the important thing is it's about stage managing the process of what happens at the auction, and much of that is done in the lead up to the auction. So that in the selling agent's mind or the vendor's mind, he has a interested buyer in my client and he has me interested, he thinks on behalf of someone else completely. So that's what I would be doing in sourcing it out, establishing the likely selling price, the maximum price at which it makes no longer any sense to continue, and gather all the information we can in the meantime, making it very clear to the selling agent of our respective interest in purchasing the property.
Now that you've outlined the process, how would you recommend our listeners conduct themselves during the auction itself?
Well, this is, as I said, we've already stage managed it. So the purpose of doing that and keeping the identity, or the trying to establish there is no relationship between the two of us, when the auction takes place, what you've got to understand with an auction or a tender, it is really just a negotiation in public. That's how you've got to think of it. Now, there are a few players in this. We have the vendor, we have the other purchasers, but we also have the auctioneer. And what we have to do is try and eliminate those systematically so that we can deal directly with the vendor. Now, with an auction, the auctioneer is not allowed to bid except by disclosing that he is making a vendor bid. In other words, he can do that up to a sensible point if he wanted to pass the property in, and he would pass it in on a declared vendor bid. He can start the auction. Quite often they will do that, disclose they are making a vendor bid to commence the auction if no one else is bidding. So what we want to do is to get the auctioneer out of the process, get the property on the market, and in the way the process of doing that, eliminate as many potential purchases as we can. So having established how much we're prepared to pay, the other figure we need to establish beforehand is what is the figure that the vendor has in their mind likely as to a price point that they will be prepared to put the property on the market. Now, in the current environment, there will probably be multiple bidders. However, and what I'm saying here is relevant for both commercial property and for residential. And the reason I say that is because many of my commercial clients, while they mightn't buy that many properties at auction, quite often I will give them a hand bidding for a property that they want to occupy themselves as a home. So the difference between residential and commercial is there's more emotion tied up with residential property than there is with commercial. And again, that's why you need to create the perception in the other bidder's mind that you are there to buy the property. And the way to do that is to structure the bidding so that it effectively shuts them out of the auction. Now, many people will tell you, look, what you do is you hang back until the very end and then you make your final bid. The problem with that is that bidding at auction is like setting up dominoes. You knock the first one, it knocks the next one, it knocks the next one, and they all collapse. Now, what I'm saying is that everyone goes in with an idea of how much they're going to pay. But I can tell you from my experience over more than 40 years, everyone will pay at least 10% more than what they actually set out to pay. And that's because they get wound up in the auction. And whether it's a residential or commercial, you do get emotionally involved. Just the spirit of the auction, you get swept away. You think, look, it's only another $5,000. The trouble is you bid five, they bid five, it ends up being another 10. But people don't think through the logic when they're swept up in the hype of the auction itself. So what we want to do is remove that. So the idea being that we work out the price that we think the vendor would put the property on the market if they were convinced that there were two or more bidders. And then my client and I will orchestrate the bidding and effectively bid against each other up to that point. Now, we're not even interested in the auctioneer controlling the bidder. We'll call out a bid and we'll continue bidding so that we end up where we want to end up. Now, that will probably eliminate at least two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of all the bidders who are shocked that it started at such a high figure and quickly got to an even higher figure. Now, as I said, you have to understand and work out what the true value of the property is. You know, for people that say, oh, look, maybe you end up paying too much, the reality is the vendor's not going to sell the property if he or she doesn't get their price. What we want to do is get the property on the market, because as soon as we do that, the auctioneer and the vendor are out of the picture. All you've got to deal with then are the bidders once it's on the market. And so we need to allow the auctioneer to go back in and say, look, we've got this fellow, being my client, Chris Lang is bidding, and he's obviously not there for the good of his health. We've got Mr. Smith and Jones and so forth, who we know have shown a lot of interest, and they just haven't bid yet. Mr. Vendor, the way to get the best out of this is to put it on the market for unreserved sale and let these bidders, who we know are keen on the property, sort it out. Now, as soon as that happens, then we know that we're only competing against anyone else who bids. Now, at that point, my client would drop out. I would, if necessary, continue to bid up until the price that we've agreed is the maximum that it makes sense to purchase the property. If it goes over that, so be it. There's nothing we can do about it, but it takes the emotion out of the bidding. So it simply means that we get the property on the market quickly, we sort out who the real bidders are, and hopefully we'll be able to secure the property, because they get the impression, look, after it's on the market, because of the way I'm bidding, I'm just going to go on all afternoon until I get the property. So again, as I said, you just think of it as a negotiation in public, and you have to create that perception that you are in absolute control and you have bottomless pockets. Now, when we get to the absolute minimum, well, I'm not going to bid any further. So it suddenly comes to an abrupt halt. But they don't know that. They don't know what my upper limit is, because I've created the perception, both bidding against my client and then bidding afterwards, if I have to, when the property's on the market, of how important it is that I need to have that property.
Obviously, each property, whether it's residential or commercial, will be different. So how do you structure your bidding script to ensure you gain a competitive advantage?
Okay. Now, let's assume for this example that we think the vendor will probably put it on the market close to 1.5 million or 1.4, somewhere around there, and that it might well go for, say, 1.6, 1.7. So, and the agents have probably been quoting low to mid $1 million for the property. So what I would do is that I would probably start the bidding at 1.2 million. My client would then quickly wait about 3 seconds and call out 1.25. Now, the important thing is that we stand towards the front of the crowd, but either side of the auctioneer. So he's forced to look left and right, and the crowd can visibly see us. So we call out the first bids. Now, it doesn't matter where the auctioneer says, and he will go through his spiel before I bid and say, look, what am I bidding? Can I start with so-and-so? And I'll call out that bid, the 1.2. My client, 1.25. Then I will follow up with 1.3. Now, it doesn't really matter whether he says he's taking $20,000 bids or what. We stick to the script. So if he argues with my client, I'll just overcall and say 1.3. And then he'll call 1.35. And then I will bid 1.4. Now, at that point, we'll stop. And that should all take probably no more than 15, at the most 20 seconds to get to that point. So it's pretty quick. I mean, 20 seconds is actually a long time. So we've gone from 1.2 to 1.4. He's been telling people it's sort of in the 1.2 to $1.5 million bracket, is, or maybe $1.2, $1.4 million bracket. Now, as I said, if the client had in mind the reserve 1.5, he's now got two bidders he thinks at 1.4. There's a whole host of others that the auctioneer has been telling him about on the lead up to the auction who haven't yet bid. And so it's not a hard case to argue with the vendor, look, here's your chance. You know, if we put it on the market at 1.4, the chances are my client will bid another 50,000 and then I'll bid again and we'll get to the 1.5, and then because it's on the market, at least one, probably two of the other bidders are going to come in and it'll just get carried away. Now, that may well happen. History or my experience is that it won't. There may be one or two other bidders that are there. And as I said, at that point, he'll probably drop down to the auctioneer $10,000 bids. And I've got a max of 1.6 or 1.7, whatever it happens to be. So I just have to make best use of the available budget that I have and bid strongly to, if we're going in 10,000 bids, I might bid 20,000 on top. So that even though the auctioneer is happy to take 10, I ramp it up and make it 20, or round it up to the next 25,000 or whatever it is. Just to show that I'm serious, don't matter what you're going to bid, I'm here to buy it. So you don't need to involve me in the auction. So long as you understand the process and you have two parties that, a friend or someone that is commercially aware, because, you know, it is a bit nerve-wracking, and that's why I take it from the 1.4 in this example onwards, so that's when the real finesse has to happen, when the property is on the market. And I mean, we can talk about the strategy for ages beforehand, but it's the tactics on the spur of the moment that are important. And yeah, it takes a skill. And as an ex-auctioneer, I understand that. So it is a process. It's simple. I don't think it's the best way to buy. But as I said, I just find out what the rules are and you know, just use them to my client's advantage.
Well, that's been great. And thanks, Chris, for taking us behind the auction curtain and explaining just how easy it is to effectively take control of things.
Well, it's really not that complicated. I mean, it's simply a matter of understanding the rules of the game and then working out how you can play by them.